and welcome to the God is a Geek podcast. My name is Adam Cook, and I'm here as your host for episode, have to look then, 412 with Christopher Hyde. Chris.
Hey, mate, how are you? Adam.
Absolutely fucking brilliant. That's how good everything is right now, mate. How are you? Doesn't matter, answer it again.
I am equally fucking brilliant.
Brilliant. I'm glad. It's just us. If you're watching the video podcast on youtube.com/godisgeek, you'll note it's just us. You might note I've got a new headset on. I'm not using this mic, but I like Mr. Hyde. I can do that. I'm not sure. I look at, again, this is very much video based, so maybe just rewatch the first few minutes. I'm not sure I like having this sticky. This seems like a big headset.
Do you know what? I know this is a visual thing, but I was like, what's that thing sticking up from his side? Like, because I haven't seen it before, and I was like, no. And then I realized it was this up here, and I was like, okay.
Well, I'm not a fan of, it's a great headset, by the way. It's a Sennheiser one.
Yeah.
Great headset. Not a fan of the visual aesthetic on camera, like the smaller form factor. I don't know. It's not really the time. I'm not reviewing that here. There will be a review on the website of these new Sennheisers. The box is just out of reach. Sorry about that. We're here to talk about video games. And there's some crackers on our list this week. I'm just going to say, Chris, what do you want to start with?
I would like to start with something that me and you had the privilege of playing a very short demo of.
Too short, but some would you argue?
Short, but very, very sweet. We got the chance to be scared shitless with the Dark Pictures anthology, Little Hope. So this is the follow-up game in the Dark Pictures anthology to Man of Medan, which came out last year, and follows a very kind of similar, I guess, broad design.
They've got a style. Until Dawn thing that they've gone, everyone like that, let's make more of them. Yeah. Bandai Namco have got, obviously, some sort of deal with them. There's going to be three.
There will be at least three, I think.
I'm sure there's three that they've confirmed.
Calling two games an anthology, I think, is a bit of a stretch. So I imagine there's at least three, maybe more. I don't think they've said how many, but yeah, you're right. It's horror, branching narratives with decisions that affect who lives, who dies, and what happens in the story, and what you discover and how much you discover, right? With different endings, all that sort of jazz. So
I feel we should, before we get into this one, just give a little history. I'm forgetting the score, but I do know that you really, really liked Man of Medan. Right?
Yes. And
I never actually finished it. I didn't dislike it. It was one of those I kept thinking, and in fact, I had it installed on the PS4 kind of behind me for quite some time until I basically went, it's never happening, is it?
Yeah, one of those ones that just you love it. I think I really liked Until Dawn. Like, I really love that game. That was one of the ones that I played late because it was on, I think, PlayStation Plus at one point. So I got into that later than probably a lot of other people. And then I was really hyped for Man of Medan. And I loved that game, like you say. I think 8.5 or a 9, I think, was the score. It was very high.
Decent score.
And what I really liked about it is it really felt like the branching narrative felt like it worked. It was very clever in the way it worked. And the decisions felt like they had an impact rather than just, it doesn't really matter because there's still just one story we want to tell. There's actually very unique endings and very unique ways you can go about, you know, even unique chapters and things that you won't even experience if you make certain choices. So I really like the way that worked, the way it worked together, the way actually you can have different experiences when you play co-op and see things from different perspectives. It was all very clever. And obviously being set on this ghost ship, for want of a better term.
Let's get into this, right? I found the biggest problem I had with that, right? I didn't like how it started because it tries to set the scene with characters you're not familiar with anyone, but it tries to set the scene with this in the past scene, like the army guys. And it was actually decent. Mm. But then it cuts to what I would say is a very brightly lit section that is, I think, intended to be very much character building in literal senses, like it is making you learn about the characters in this game.
Yep.
But I think it spends too long there. And it does that thing of you jump from person to person to person so you can kind of shape them but also learn them. And the jumping ahead now to Little Hope, what we saw or have seen so far, I don't think this preview build, I understood it to be like the opening 25 minutes, 30 minutes of the game. I don't think it is. I think it's a slice. But it's I kind of wish it was, because the cold open of this, where it's just like, you're in the shit, bang, go, learn these characters as you go, I dig a lot. And I have to say, what we played together of this has made me want to go back to Man of Medan. Because I feel this is more assured, more capable. But I also think, because it's dark from the very start of this, in fact, the whole of this preview build is dark. But maybe, like, the idea of a ghost ship is good. Like, Resi 7 does it, and Revelations. What was the game? They did two of them. It was Revelations.
Revelations, good. Yeah.
There's boats involved there. They showed that sort of boat-based horror can do good numbers, but this feels, the source material feels, I don't know, it just feels more rife for the pickings.
Potentially. I mean, I actually didn't know much about the source material of the Man of Medan story. I only looked up it after I'd finished it, which is definitely the right thing to do.
Yeah.
Since we've played it, I've always had to resist looking up about the Salem Witch Trials, which is what Little Hope is based on, because I don't want to spoil anything. I don't want to know things that might reveal things or give me clues. I want to find it out for myself. Whilst Man of Medan was very claustrophobic and atmospheric, because it was like narrow corridors and, you know, metallic walls and everything, this feels, it's dark, but it feels much more open. You do get a kind of Resident Evil Silent Hill vibe from...
I was just going to say, we mentioned it when we were playing, but the thing is, it's, you've said it now, so I'm going to just reinforce it and back you up. The thing that I'm afraid to say is I got major Silent Hill vibes off the sort of fog. The fog came in suddenly, literally near a bridge in a, because it's a preview build and we were just there. We don't know really how we got there. I mean, everyone seems to be bruised and cut up.
Yeah.
But that fog section where it just comes in and, like, it's, there's a bridge and it's you know, there's the, you can't see much. It really made me think of Silent Hill, which is going to make people go, oh, what, Silent Hill? And it's not they're not similar games. They're not, you know, this is still one of those. This is still that formula.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting, though. I want to see where they're going with it. You know, Until Dawn was like, it wasn't, but it was like Cabin in the Woods. It obviously branched out into other things. Ghost Ship was Man of Medan. And then, whereas this feels kind of, I'm downplaying Ghost Ship, but, you know.
No, I know. It
feels more open. I have to say as well, I feel like I'm really interested in the character selection on this game. Because the past two games, Until Dawn and Man of Medan, has literally been almost like teen horror. And I actually quite like there's two older characters.
Couple of older characters straight away. I mean, the initial, I don't know the names, so I'm sorry, but the male older character, initially I thought, hang on, what, he's involved in this. Something's off about him.
Yeah.
But then he seems to sort of normalise a bit.
He might be, but we don't know.
No, we don't know. It's not a case of, oh, in a preview sense. We don't know. We have a slice of this game. It's a press demo, really.
Yeah. But I think you're absolutely right in terms of what it does do is it really whetted my appetite for it. It was
too much, would argue.
It was one of those things, it finished and I was like, yeah, little bastards. I want to play more of that.
Another 10 minutes of it, which is a great sign.
Yeah.
But again, the problem is, and this is always the case with preview builds, but it's really the case with a game that's so story-based, what happened and how much happened before we started playing? Because if there's like an hour and a half protracted section where you're introduced to the characters, the scene is set, but it takes too long, and it's all in the daylight again. I feel these games are best when they lean into it. Like, some of the dialogue's a bit dodgy, but it's also what I would kind of want. I want that kind of ability to... It's schlock horror, and I want to be able to kind of laugh a bit at the same time, but then be like, oh, shit, you know, there's a horrible thing just happened. I don't want them to over-egg it by just being like, no, this is a serious story and we're going to show you an hour and a half of character, because it's important that you know this guy's a professor and these are probably his students, but we want to show you how they got here and what it's like, but like the start of Man of Dan for me didn't work because it was too much character building, and it was like, I knew too much about these teens. Like, I knew that so-and-so was related to so-and-so, and they were... And like, you can deliver that in a much much more efficient fashion. I mean, yeah. I do actually desperately want to now go and play it. Also because we played this on PC and yes. it looked fucking good. Like, it looked really good. I don't remember Man of Medan looking that good, but I played it on PS4 Pro.
Yeah.
But I don't remember it looking as good as that.
It didn't, and I played it on PS4, so it definitely didn't look that good for me. You know, even the character models, the lighting, it looked spot on. Mm. I think the bit about Man of Medan, you're right, had a lot to set up before you actually got to the ghost ship, for want of a better. You know, had the, like you said, the past it. Then the here's all the characters. Then actually,
I'd say it's a good 2 hours before anything major happens in the Man of Medan story, not the backstory.
Yeah.
But this seems to intertwine. I mean, we'll do more on this. You know, Chris, you'll write something and there'll probably be a video to go alongside this. But rather than, like in Man of Medan, it starts off in the past, then cuts to present. This, and I hope they can tick, because I really dig the way they've done this, the sort of supernatural stuff where it will jump, as we are talking, suddenly they were literally back in time witnessing. It was almost like they touched an item and that transported them back. But it was, so rather than being like, here's a scene in the past, here's a scene in the present, it was both kind of at the same time. And I really like that delivery method. Because it's like snappy. It doesn't do that thing of, and The Last of Us 2 does this, where it's like, now we're going to go back and what you wanted to know, which is just happened, what was the resolution of that thing? Sorry, you're going to play an hour of this. This doesn't feel like you're going to, there was payoff. Instant. In 25 minutes, there was payoff.
Yeah, and in 25 minutes, I have so many questions, and my brain was buzzing. Yes. I went and was kind of talking to my wife about it, and she hates horror, so it wasn't the right thing to do in a dark room before bed. But for her, I was like, I'm trying to think, like, what was going on with that, like you say, the time bit and everything else, because there's like flashbacks, like you say, to like the Salem witch trials and things. You know, like, but they're kind of.
They're not. I don't want people to think, oh, it's just some flashback you get to watch. No, you are in. You are still the characters who are witnessing this past event.
Yeah.
But you, because right near the end, with the actual witch, not the witch trial, the results of the witch trial.
Yeah.
You can. She's reaching out, the witch or not witch, whatever you want to. You know, she's reaching out to the character she's talking to, which is you from the present.
Yeah. And I thought that was really clever. And it was only when I didn't really appreciate how clever that is and how I feel about that and how you can maybe manipulate that moving forward until I started talking about it to my wife, and that's what made me want to dive back in. And again, I want to play the game because...
It's a long way off too.
It is. It's like 30th of October, which I'm like... Urgh! But very excited about it. Want to play through that like demo a few more times, I think, to see a bit more of it, because like I say, you make some choices, I can obviously make others, see what happens there. So definitely, you know, we made a lot of I made those choices, you were just watching, but felt like I came up with that bearing updated mechanic which they have in their stories, which shows a kind of key pop device change. You've made a decision which is going to affect something, and that must have come up about 4 or 5 times in the 25 minutes. So clearly there's lots of decisions that you can really affect the story, which is really exciting to see that and see how, even in half an hour, how maybe things change. So very excited, a little bit scared, a lot of screeching, a lot of darkness, like you say, but really excited to see more of it.
I would also add, so like, you know, opinions and all that, but I would say, like, where you really enjoyed Man of Medan, I still haven't gone back, and I would like to. I would say there was a lot of people, you kind of either loved it or you hated it.
Yes.
What I would say is that don't write this one off based on what you felt about Man of Medan, because I'm really, really surprised by this.
I think a lot of people agree with you completely, by the way. I think it is a little bit more Marmite. I think a lot of people went, I wanted another Until Dawn, and I didn't feel like
but
they
I
quite
think
got
they
it.
They tried to make another Until Dawn. Like the idea of these all, like you said, every character is a teen kind of.
Yeah.
And like, again, I'm not being funny, but just playing that opening couple of hours, I didn't feel like any of the teens were particularly likable.
And I think that's what people, that was the first thing that put a lot of people off. They were like, I wanted Until Dawn. I really found myself, even if it was kind of smirking at them, I was enjoying those characters and their, you know, bitch fights and everything else that was going on in the cabin. Whereas these ones are just like, I don't like that person, don't like that person, don't like that person. I'll tolerate that one. So yeah, I'm interested
and that's
to
it,
see
how
it goes with this mix of characters, because it's a very
I just felt they were instantly not, I don't want to say more likable because it's half an hour. Maybe 40 minutes, but because we were having a few technical issues, but we got there. But I just found that, like you said, no, you've nailed it. You know, an interesting mix. They don't all just seem like teen douchebag archetype 1, 2, 3, and 4.
Yeah.
Like, I want to know, I really want to know what's going on with the, and again, sorry about the names, but the female older character.
Mm.
I want to know why they're all beaten up. But I do really want to know what, because she seems really sort of more scared and out of it than anyone else. And
yeah.
Do we want to get into, probably not. I mean, it's only a small, let's move on. But like I say, I'm just, all I would say is Chris seems to like it and he really liked the first one. I fell off the first one super quick, but this 100% has me going, oh, I'll be making time for this one. And it really has made me think, actually, I kind of want to go back to the other one and get, because I really loved Until Dawn, but it felt a bit like Lightning in a Bottle, and Man of Medan felt like they were trying to recapture that Lightning in a Bottle, whereas so far, in a preview sense, based on a half an hour demo played a couple of times, Little Hope feels more like them going, yeah, okay, what we're going to do is we're going to make this, which is one of those, but it's not literally going, what if we took Until Dawn and put it into this story? Whereas this feels like it's still the same games style, the genre. It just feels, more interesting. And you can read more thoughts, I'm sure, coming soon, if not already up on godisageek.com. Anything else you've played that you want to or can talk about, Chris?
No, I really want to hear about what you've been playing, if I'm honest with you. Not leading that in leading that in nicely. I really want to talk about something else.
Chris White reviewed Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 1 and 2. Okay. Mm. And normally, not always, but generally, he scores games. If he really likes a game, he's usually like maybe a point above me. So he gives like a 9 and I would maybe an 8. And not always, just I always look at a review. And it's his review and it's his opinion, but I always tend to find he's hotter on a game that he likes. Do you know what I mean? And I'm normally a little... Whereas this is the first time, I think, ever I've seen a review of Chris's and I've gone, oh, I'd have gone higher. Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 1 and 2 is a fucking 10 out of 10 masterpiece of a video game. It's got no right to be... And the fucking thing about this, man, is it's... I've been talking about this recently on the pod a bit, how the arcade style games are kind of doing me right at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't... So twice this year, I fell through what feels like a Quantum Leap style time hole. Final Fantasy VII's opening menu music, the was like, I just left that on the pause menu. And I've spoken to other people who did the same. And I sat there with the controller, feeling quite emotional hearing this music, right? Tony Hawk's, if anyone who's listening, you played them as well, you will probably be familiar with, hang on, for the video purposes, sitting, playing this game with an older controller than this, like, you know, just playing it like that, and then suddenly, at the end of like a 30-second section of you doing, get racking up the points, you mess it up. You plant it wrong, you plant yourself into the ground, and you've messed it up, and the time is gone, and you have that feeling where you go, argh! And it's so annoying, because you did it. You just, you tried one too many rotations.
Yeah.
And you didn't need to, because you can just press up or down, up, down to manual, and you the idea is to keep it running.
Yeah.
And I had a moment where I had been, and the thing is, right, this is the mad thing, it was on the warehouse level, which I had played the demo. That's the demo. I'd played that already, but I was so close. And it was the last, you know, in these games, you have to, there's loads of different goals to.
Yeah.
It was the last one. It was the 100,000 score. And I was at 97,000. And if I just landed this trick, I would have comfortably smashed that. And it was like someone just threw me through like a Rick and Morty style portal into the past.
So you didn't. So just to be clear, you didn't actually need to do your extra little swivel to get to the 100. You were already there.
No, this was like I'd done 8 or 9 tricks. I just needed to land a trick.
Land it, yeah.
Just
yeah.
needed to land it, and for some. Yeah. But you get into the zone.
Oh yeah.
Like we're like, oh, and your eyes go that like this, you know, and it's. Man, it's apt. I mean, look,
I've never played Tony Hawk 1 and 2, but I put so many hours into 3 and 4, right? So I get the whole, exactly the vibe you're talking about, all the, you just kind of go into a trance, don't you? I find.
Yes.
And it's a ridiculous kind of story, right? But I played Mario and Sonic at the Tokyo Olympics, if it will now ever happen. There's a skateboard game in that, and there's manuals and stuff, and you're just like, oh my god, I'm just doing it. Like you don't even think, you're like, well, I know I need to go into a manual now, and I know I need to do a little kickflip, and it's hardwired into your head about grinding and manually and kickflipping and everything else. And I need this game in
man,
my life.
100%, like it's exceptional. The thing is, what they've done is so smart, because they've done what the very best remakes do, which is don't mess with what makes it right. But if you see an opportunity to improve it, take that opportunity. Trust that your audience knows the originals and will appreciate improvements. So what they've done, so for example, in 3, was it 3 or 4 where they added the wall jump where you could bounce off the wall? It might have been 3.
Yeah.
That's in this. Mm-hmm. Okay, so you can do that. You can, if you want, go in the options menu and turn it off to get like kind of original controls. There's a couple of things they added in the later games they've included in 1 and 2 remake.
Yeah.
This is a really interesting game for me for the site, because this is mega high on my Game of the Year list now, and it's a remake. However, this is something unbelievable. Vicarious Visions deserve awards, man. They do, because they've done the Crash Team. They've done, I think, Spyro. I think they did the Crash games. And aren't they now doing Crash 4?
Is that them as well?
I think they're doing. I'm gonna have to look it up. I've got a feeling that they are. It might be Toys for Bob. Crash Bandicoot 4, we're Googling. Toys for Bob. Okay, that's fine. But they
don't want too many, you know,
bangers. Yeah. Actually, they did the end. Sorry, Toys for Bob did the Insane Trilogy. They did the remake. So what did Vicarious do? Because Vicarious Visions have definitely done something recently. I'm gonna have to put this to bed and look it up. But this is so amazing. They did do that as well. Sorry, they did do Insane Trilogy.
So it just, for me, it just. Tony Hawk, whether it's 1, 2, 3, or 4, I don't think it matters. Just ignore 5. I think it's
so rightly so.
It's one of those things that you just. I think a lot of people who have ever played them, they just have that as a core memory, because I think anyone that's really has played it to death, because it's such an addictive thing. And so you have, like you say, you have the muscle memory. You just there's a kind of place your brain goes to when you play it, and it's so nice to think, okay, I've got now an opportunity. To read, because other than digging out and blimmin' dusting off my GameCube, I haven't got an opportunity to do that.
But you know, like, I think of a recent game, right? A new game, and I would say something like Titanfall or Apex Legend. You know, when you play a video game, a new one, and it just, there's something straight away that feels good. Mm. Like, you don't know yet if you're going to love the game, but instantly everything in your hand, you feel good.
Yeah.
That's Tony Hawk's. And that game feels so good, man. Like, it feels so good. Like, you feel in control until you don't, because you took that extra spin, or you held the grab too long, or you just pissed it away because you were, you know, almost overcompensating. It just, something about this game.
I guess it's one of those games that you smile from the start, I guess, because
Super Meat Boy is another one.
Dead Cells comes to mind for me. Like
Dead
when
Cells
I
is another
that
one.
For the first
feels.
Time.
And that's the first thing about Dead Cells, by the way, because I played that in early access. Your first impression isn't, oh, this looks amazing. It does, but your first impression is, oh, this feels right. This feels good. And when you then play a game like it, and it feels all right, but it doesn't feel that there's not that like, oh, this feels... Spelunky's one. Rogue Legacy, I think, is one. Mm. Those kind of games where right away the people making it understand that the most important thing is that, yes, it looks good. Yes, it's got lots for you to do, but it has to feel good. And that is what Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 1 and 2 does. And that's what those original games did.
Yep.
But this feels like fucking so good. Like, you... I'm playing it almost just like going, nah, man, this is too good, man. This feels so right. And it's, yeah, I mean, it's up there.
I think it's going to be a very interesting Game of the Year conversation.
It's going to be weird, especially with next gen.
Yeah, I think, well, yeah, I hadn't even considered that. But I think just what's...
Game Pass, Game of the Year.
the different... games which are encroaching on people's personal top tens. It's not, we haven't even had some of the AAAs yet, but it's not filled.
To come.
It's not filled with, I know not everyone's top 10 is always filled with AAAs, but it feels like there's going to be very diverse, you know. I think if you started this year and gone, right, what's your top 10 going to be? There's a lot that have crept in that more so this year than others that you just wouldn't be saying, I think, which is really interesting. Prepare for arguments at the end of the year, maybe.
Well, it seems as good a point as any to move on to another game that I think is actually going to... I'd be surprised if it didn't get at least talked about. Wasteland 3.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was only when I realised this game had co-op that I was like, I'm going to play this. It's on Game Pass. Mm-hmm. This game's amazing. They took the Wasteland formula and added XCOM into it, and that's all that you needed to say to me. And I will say... there are things that could be improved, and I think now that Xbox, Microsoft own In Exile, I think they're going to make some very good games, like some incredible games. Because what this game, to talk about what lets it down a bit is on PC. I'm playing is that it's a little bit buggy. Like I had a bit where there's a dialogue option, and I clicked the one I wanted, and it sort of didn't activate, but then I couldn't activate any others, so I had to just load my save game again. Luckily, I have one right around the corner. Mm. That stuff gets fixed with a bigger budget, with more time, with a better QA team, perhaps. I don't know. It's weird. It has to load quite a lot. And again, I feel like a bit more optimization, because I'm using SSDs. It feels like it shouldn't... the load times feel longer than they should for a game of its ilk.
Mm.
But everything else, mate, like the RPG-ness is... RPG-ness. Yes, that stuff is amazing. Like, it's so deep. I mean, I had to text Mick Fraser a few things because I was like, it has explained this, but I didn't understand it because there's so much thrown at you because it is a proper, you know, this is like where Fallout, you know what I mean, came from. This is the people that, well, not the people, like Brian Fargo is, you know, the team, his team. I don't know what it is now compared to what it was then, but these are the kind of daddies of it all. And... it's just, it's such a terrific RPG, and like the writing's sharp.
Mm.
Like there is, I hate to do the qualification for this because it's not just funny for a game, it's funny.
Yeah.
Like Mick mentioned the guy who's Scottish, but he's not, and I'm not going to spoil it, but like it's also like, I find it strange still seeing... obviously, games have a sort of, you know, foul language in them now, but I do find it strange seeing games with that in, like, the menus and stuff. Like, one of the skills is like sneaky shit. You know, that's one of the things you can level up.
It's normally the arena for professionalism, isn't it? In the menus and the...
But as one of the attributes is sneaky shit, you know. what have I played? 6-7 hours? But even in that, I'm going to Mick, did you do this? And he's like, what? Like, there's a section in a nightclub where I went in and there was a guy who said to me, hey, can you listen? Hey, man, can you get my drugs back? And I was like, oh, whatever, I'll probably get something out of it. You go into this room and there's this other mercenary group and they're partying and they're like, no, you get lost, you know, we're sorting that out. And then he... you're in it. Once you've gone in there, you're going to be in an argument. And that fight's really hard. And I think because I used too many Molotovs, I lost the first time I tried again, then suddenly the whole nightclub was on alert. Like, and I had to fight every guard in this otherwise friendly nightclub. And he's like, no, I didn't have any of that happen. He said, I did, you know, he did this, he did that. And I'm like, oh, yeah, that seems like an option that you could do. And he goes, oh, yeah, I also got so-and-so to join my party. And it's like, nope, didn't happen for me. It's just, I don't know how it plays with the controller. I'd be interested because it does feel so much more. It feels very, because it's an XCOM style game. It's that tactics, and they work. They like XCOM works on consoles, but the direct control feels. But then I suppose perhaps you can move around in the sort of isometric view with a controller on Xbox, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, that's what Desperados 3 did, didn't it? You could actually move.
Yeah, so maybe that's that. But it just feels like a PC. I do desperately want to try out the co-op because I just want to know how that works. But Wasteland 2 is... Wasteland 3. I think I played the second one or dipped into it, but Wasteland 3 is phenomenal. Like, it's... I don't know, man. Like, it feels like in a year of games where we've had some absolute bangers. Like, this week I have played Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 2, 1 and 2, and Wasteland 3. And I have a little notes on here that I update when I feel like a game's made my list. And both of them have gone into my top 10. And pushed out other games that I thought would probably be below. But then saying that, like, Ghost of Tsushima dropped out because I just never went back. Tony Hawk's to me is that arcade purity, that distillation of game feel. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And Wasteland 3 is just, I don't think, there are a lot, you know, that Desperados, you just mentioned it, is a game similar. But I feel like a game like Ghost of Tsushima is cool and it plays well and it's a beautiful looking game. But I guess it's less interesting than to me a Wasteland 3. Which segs, I guess, nicely into the other game I played, which is the AWE or what I think means Alan Wake Experience DLC for Control. And man, where did Control finish in our game of the year last year? Do you remember? It didn't win it because Plague Tale did.
Plague Tale definitely won it. I think it must have been top five, right?
I feel like I tried to get it number one.
You were pushing
for
it.
And man, playing Control again for the DLC. I should have pushed. Control's a brilliant video game. Brilliant video game. And this DLC is... I don't want to spoil things, so I'm not going to talk directly about the ending, but I will say it's perhaps one of the biggest cock teases I have seen in a video game in a great many years, because they literally hint at what their next game is going to be at the end of this DLC, or what it should be if they're being right by the community. And it's like, man, this is going to be some time away as well, isn't it? Yeah. And they've hinted elsewhere anyway, saying it is all a connected universe. This DLC veers more into horror territory. Like, there's one kind of boss, I don't want to say nemesis like, but you basically chase him out of, you go to a new area, and the reason that area has been sealed off is because he's down there and he's like one of the doctors that's been consumed by the darkness, which is the same stuff that Alan Wake was fighting. And the Alan Wake stuff, he narrates it, and you don't play as him, do you meet him? You have a cutscene with him, but I'm not sure if that's real or not. It's one of those, you know, and it's a more horror-based game. You have to pick up, like, lamps that are around and use them to shine the darkness to clear it out so you can progress.
Right.
And the boss, like, each area you go to, you have to sort of chase him out of that area to, you know, push him basically towards the culmination of the game, which is revisit. You know, have you played it?
No, I haven't. Oh. I know it's one of those ones. Just like, you are an idiot, and that's me being polite for the podcast.
Well, the thing is, man, like, I played it through an Xbox One. And the publisher provided like a save file that kind of got you to where you almost would have been when you finished the game, so you could just access the DLC. Excuse me. And they did that for the Foundation as well. And in the game, there are kind of recreations of places where these altered world events, or AWEs, or Alan Wake experiences,
whatever all stands for.
Yeah, so you can probably guess, given the Alan Wake experience-ness of this DLC, where that final culmination of the battle is set to take place. It's not quite as grand as I had hoped it would be. If you've played it and you're listening, I'd hoped it would be that, and you know, as you're a listener who's played it, it isn't quite. It's like a cardboard cutout version. But it's a... And the final boss fight isn't great. The rest of them are, but the final one does that awful thing of basically, oh, you've killed me. Ha ha, no, you haven't. I've got all my health back. Let's go again. And you've got to do all that shit again. Bit of a shame. Bit I think Remedy are better than that. I think they're better than that. I think they can be more creative. The rest of the game is, you know, I think they can be more creative. But this is a good bit of DLC, very good at times. But what it reminds me of, man, is that Control is another game that's got good game feel. Real, it feels, and on the PC, it's there now. It's smooth and it looks great. It runs well. Yeah. I haven't had an awful lot of time to play games recently, but the three I've been playing, just okay, man. Yeah. I think that's all I can talk about right now. There is other things going on. We'll talk about in weeks to come. Mm-hmm. So let's get into some listener correspondence then. Why not? And this one comes in from Discord, and it's G-Town Steve, and he's got two questions. I will ask the second one first, because I feel like the first one is a question directly for me. So let's go for this question. And Chris, what is your unpopular gaming opinion? I think, this is him speaking, I think that Tony Hawk's American Wasteland is actually an okay game. I don't even want to read this sentence. But
read it. Say it.
I didn't read that in advance. I saw... He thinks that Tony Hawk's American Wasteland is actually an okay game and that Super Mario World is quite overrated. Sorry, he said. Now, that is up there with the most unpopular gaming opinions.
I mean... Super Mario World is the best Mario game ever made. So
you nearly got it. It's the best video game ever made. before we get into this question, if you maybe don't give the answer, if I said to you, Chris, what's the best game ever made in your opinion? Could you, like I've just done, do that?
I don't.
I'm just saying, could you? If
I don't think I'd probably veer to something like Super Mario World. I think, but I'd probably have to think about it. I always think about that question of what's my favorite game, which isn't the same thing. It's definitely not the same question. Like I know what I'd say is my favorite game of all time, but like
that bang.
Yeah, like that bang.
Go on, do it. Whatever, do it. It's my question. My listener question.
Secret of Mana on the SNES. Buggy as hell, which is why I'd never say it's the best game ever made. You know, but it not buggy as hell. That's harsh, but like. That game for me, and let's not go down this path.
But let's answer his question then. Go on. Yeah. What is your unpopular? I mean, should I just get mine out of the way because it's the easy one?
Yeah.
It's Fall Guys, isn't it? At the moment, it's Fall Guys.
Yeah.
And we'll go no further because I'm not going to get angry. I'm angry enough, quite frankly. I'm not going to get angrier. And that's the one I would say right away. I don't like Fall Guys. I don't think it's particularly brilliant. Done.
I don't know. I'm trying to think if I'm really if I have unpopular opinions on this. What do I not like?
Older than the general sort of Twitter audience, so I don't really think of my opinions as it goes against the grain because I kind of don't care. Your opinions are your opinions, but I do know that I'm very much on the. Do you know what? Another one. No, it's gone. I just thought of one, and then it went straight back out the other end.
Man of Medan was good. There you go. That was quite unpopular.
I've got another one. Right.
There you go.
Yeah, everyone says Mario Sunshine is rubbish.
Today?
It's widely regarded as not being very good. Now, while I respect and agree that it wasn't quite done, it needed a little while longer in development, but it had to be released because they needed a game for that console, I think Sunshine's excellent.
Yeah, I do.
And I always did.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I haven't played it for a very, very long time.
I wonder if people will eat their words given the recent release of the... Well, not recent release, but the recent announcement of the release of 3D.
I mean, maybe, but like it does seem that everyone always shits on Sunshine. And I always look at it going, we played a different game. Maybe, you know, I really like Sunshine.
I think Zelda Link Between Worlds is a little bit overrated.
Between Worlds, the newer one?
Yeah, the one that's linked to the past version 2.
I think...
Probably as controversial as I'll get with a Zelda gaming opinion, probably.
Here you go. I think almost every 2D Zelda is better than Ocarina of Time.
I know you do, and we...
Is that an unpopular opinion?
I think these days it's probably more unpopular to go, I still like Ocarina of Time, which I do. I still think it's the best one,
I'm not, by the way, saying it's in any way not a good game.
No, but like...
I mean, or maybe the first two. Aren't as good, obviously. Like Legend of Zelda, the first original two aren't. I mean, they were balls hard, by the way, those first two.
Yes,
I think the second one especially, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, it was. I think the thing with Ocarina of Time, it feels like, I've done a a list, go to godisgeek.com if you want to find that on what I think the best Zelda games are, and Ocarina of Time is top of that list, which I know you disagree with, but I feel like it's more, I feel it's more trendy these days to say, oh no, Ocarina of Time's not the best. Whether that's popular or not, I don't know, but yeah.
I mean, Breath of the Wild is the best Zelda game.
I put it third.
What was two?
Link to the Past.
We'll move on. We'll have to move
yeah,
on.
Yeah, we'll have to move on. We'll spend an hour on this. Yeah. Go on. Yeah.
Just trying to think. No, I don't know. I was going to start in my head, then I was going to start rating Mario games, and I don't think that's what we need. G-Town Steve also says, you often say that you don't do news on the podcast. Why not? Okay, there's a couple of reasons. One of which is that we record this sometimes quite far in advance. We do that so we can give our Patreon supporters like super early access.
Yeah.
We can certainly bring news back, but it would mean we perhaps would have to change the published day of the podcast, because the thing I'm conscious of is listening to news on a podcast. I listen to a lot of podcasts, but listening to them when the news is like maybe 3 or 4 days old is bad enough. But if that news has actually been debunked because it was a rumor, or has, you know, you could be talking about, oh, have you heard this leak? By the time you hear this podcast, it's not only been confirmed, but like released. The other reason, and it'd be interesting to get your take on this, Chris, and our listeners or viewers, as you will, I do like talking about game news. There are two other additional issues. One is that if I put a news story down that I want to talk about, but nobody else is interested in, it's very difficult to feign interest, and that's not what this podcast needs to be. Like, I feel like you've heard us talk quite passionately about four video games. If I want to talk about, I want to talk about a game because there's some interesting news, but no one else is interested in it. There's other people in the room. You know, that's the guy sitting down at a table at dinner talking about work, and everyone's going, fucking hell, man. Like, you know, we don't care. We don't care about your work. Shut up, man. Talk about something. You know, it's the guy talking about football in a room of people who hate football. The other reason is a lot of the big news that we would talk about, and I'll reference the Epic versus Apple battle, right? That is so nuanced. There are so many ways of looking at that news. And we could come in at that and you could talk about it and you could say, I side with Apple, sort of, because Epic have broken the terms of service that they knew about. On the other hand, you could say, but Epic are doing this and it will help all the other developers. On the other hand, you could go back to Apple and say, well, Apple are losing the mobile phone battle. Android are far, far ahead of them in terms of numbers. They need the 30% cut. Otherwise, they can't afford to spend the money they do on making their phones better. On the other hand, you could go back to Epic and say, yeah, and the way they did this, which was like literally tell Apple they were going to do it, get kicked off the store, instantly file a lawsuit, and then release a video, kind of makes them look a bit dickish. And the trouble is even going through that,
it's a good video though, wasn't it?
It was, well,
right, depending on your perspective,
I'm not sure,
but I guess this
at the end of that, well, that's what I mean, and then at the end of that, by the time we've discussed it, there could be developments. And also, I don't think that anyone on this podcast is in a place to be able to talk with authority. I'm not a solicitor, lawyer. I don't know all the inner workings of what the deals are, what went on. I was always raised to the phrase I would go by is, know whereof you speak. You know, I know whereof I speak. When I'm talking about Tony Hawk's or Wasteland or Control, I've played them. I've experienced them. I can tell you what I think about them. And you can say I'm wrong, but I'm only wrong to you because it's my opinion and I've played it and it's how I feel. When it comes to a news story where there are facts, it's difficult to be like, oh no, I'm going to opine on this. And it's like, but you're unless you have the facts bang on, you're making a tit of yourself. And like I say, I was always raised to, I know whereof I speak. And I, some news, definitely, like I would love to talk about the Mario news, but by the time you read this, by the time you listen to this, it's going to be old news. So it's old. So I don't know. If people want us to talk about news, we'll talk about news. Absolutely.
Okay, so I kind of agree with everything you just said. I think it's interesting for me, the map, which is useful, otherwise I'm getting kicked off and never coming back.
No,
but
not at all. I think
the Mario news, for example, I think is a really interesting one, because I agree with you. For me, it has to be news that we're not going to talk about for 3 hours, which I think you make a really good point on. Yes. And I think it has to be, I think our opinion on the news, it has to be authentic. Otherwise, what's the point? If we're not passionate about the news,
then that's what I was getting at. If we force, try to, and I'm like, come on, lads, talk about this news. It's like, well,
yeah.
Why are we? If you don't want to, the podcast has to be something we enjoy and it has to be something we want to talk about. I'm not against talking about news, but it just means we need to rethink. And if people really listening want us to talk about news, we'll talk about news.
I mean, my take on it, and I'd be interested to hear what the listeners or the viewers think, is I think it should be about, not maybe our opinion on news, but like for me, the Mario news is super exciting and there's easily conversations that I'm sure, you know, if Adam Carroll was here, he'd be like jumping up and down about like Mario news.
If we'd had Adam and Mick on here, I think we probably would have discussed the Mario news this week because it is huge.
Yeah, and that's not news in the sense of there's nothing controversial. You don't need to be an expert in anything. It's like, it's just we'd be talking about we weren't expecting it. There's, you know, and I think you can just kind of go, how's that made people feel? Were they surprised? Did they expect it? And you can then move on. And you're not. Yes. And I think the point of the podcast then is not surprised. Did you know this news had dropped? Because yes, by the time the podcast is launched, everyone knows that news has dropped. It's just, here's our take on it.
Yes.
We're not presenting the news to you. We're giving you our take on the news. And I think that's the difference. It's our take on it. And it's, and like you say, it's the type of news where you feel like you can, without going down a rabbit hole, give your own personal take on it. And I think that's where it wins. And I think those news stories are probably quite few and far between when you think about them. And that's probably why it's not consistent. But, you know, sometimes we'll talk about like recent game shows and stuff like that and how we feel about them. You know, that's still kind of news, if you like. And it works because it's our opinion and our reflections on them. So it definitely can work. But I think it has to be that within those sorts of guardrails.
I mean, I can give you controversial opinions if that's what people want. Like I had a realization today, Chris. Right, it's music related. So if you'll indulge me, I think the band Blur are shit.
I mean, I don't like eggs, mate. So I think, you know, there's plenty of.
No, I think Blur wrote ten good songs, maybe.
Does that make a band shit if they made wrote ten good songs?
There's more than 10 songs on one album, and they released a lot of albums.
I know.
Give you controversy. That's what I'm telling you.
Yeah.
Let's move on. Thomas Show. This is now the part of the show where Thomas McInnes has sent us in a raft of questions, and we're going to just smash into them right now. And Chris, this one's for you. With the tins of chocolate, there's no particular reason this is for you, by the way.
I'm very passionate about this question, so this is a good one to me.
Okay, well, with the tins of chocolates now in shops, it's time to declare the winner in an epic battle between Roses, Heroes, Quality Street and Celebrations. There can only be one winner. What's the view on this, Chris?
So it's Quality Street, hands down. For me, they're the best ones. It's the one we get every year. There's a few things I want to say about this. Firstly, the tins are getting smaller. They're plastic and they're smaller, and that does my head in. I want a big metal tin at Christmas. The thing that Quality Street for me is that I really like the green triangles. I'm a sucker for those bad boys. I could eat them all day, and there's never enough of them. But I think it's the variety in there. You've got something for everybody. Whereas if I want, I'm going to lay into Roses now because they have gone shit. If I think of Roses when I was a kid, they were on par with Quality Street. Now they're about 90% wrappers, which is ridiculous. There's about 10 chocolates in an entire tub, and they're all chocolate caramels. Tell me I'm wrong. They're all different versions of caramel and chocolate. Hard caramel and chocolate, soft caramel and chocolate, a different shape of soft caramel and chocolate, or just caramel, no chocolate. It's ridiculous. And I've had enough, quite frankly. And Roses are awful. And anyone that goes into a shop, maybe okay if you bought some Celebrations, fine. You know, I'm not going to be annoyed at you. If you buy me Roses, I'm going to throw them back in your face. It's disgusting. Quality Street every day of the week. There we go. I get very angry about this, mate. Roses have gone downhill.
I mean, so
if you're going to say Roses now, we are going to fall out. Are you
so
serious?
I picked a tin of Roses the other day. Wait.
Okay.
Over right. Quality Street. Now, I'm going to say this right away. Okay. Celebrations, Heroes are fine alternative choices, but fucking get them out of this conversation. This is a two-way. You don't have four teams in a final. You have two, and it's Quality Street and it's Roses.
Yeah, agree with you about.
Roses would have been my pick. Okay? Because they even had, I believe, at one point, the audacity to bring back the coffee suite. But that's gone again. That's gone again. Roses are a huge, huge letdown.
They are.
They have shat the bed, quite frankly, in terms of how much caramel is in them. But the reason they really shit the bed, right, is because what they've allowed to happen is you had Cadbury's and you got Cadbury's caramel and Cadbury's cream egg, and you had all that, but you then had a tin of Roses, which was a separate thing.
Yeah.
Now, in a, and this is disgraceful, in the tin of Roses, you have cream egg sweets, you have Cadbury's caramel, little the same things you get in Heroes. It's unnecessary.
I don't even want to look in a tin of Roses, a tub of Roses, because they don't do tins. But is it still because the last time I checked, before I was just so disgusted, I probably chucked him in the bin, it was just, the wrappers were just huge. Yes.
They're huge wrappers. Yeah. There's more wrapper than chocolate.
Yeah.
Now, I will say that, unfortunately, Quality Street does get marked down because it has a coconut one in it.
But I don't mind coconut, but yeah.
I very strongly dislike coconut.
Yeah.
So it does annoy me, and that is a crying shame. A disgrace, if I'm honest with you, a disgrace. No need for it. But the thing is what they do have is that sort of brown toffee one, the little, the toffee penny.
No,
the chocolatey toffee.
Yeah, I know what you
mean. Which is tremendous. It's a teeth destroyer, but it's tremendous. They also get the strawberry and orange cream correct. Although I will say that Roses now have brought back the fondant inside those. So that is, again, a plus point. I think I'd even go Quality Street first, and I think I'd actually now bring Celebrations in second place because it's something different.
Yeah. I'd put Roses bottom. They're an absolute abomination.
No,
mate.
I think I'd go Hero. It's a difficult one because Heroes have got like Dinky Deckers in them now as well. But I don't want that in a tin of in a Christmassy chocolate tin.
No,
I don't want miniature versions of chocolate bars I can buy.
No.
So, yeah, it's a unanimous Quality Street.
Okay.
Do you prefer, Chris, the Nintendo, ta-da, this is out in 2 weeks approach, or the more traditional years of previews and trailers before a game's release?
I think I like the ta-da, 2 week approach because it's a nice surprise. There is something to be said. We may or may not come up to it today. I can't remember if it was a question's gone. I'd like the whole hype, building hype, little sneaky reveals and building expectation. But then at the same time, despite being a really big lover of Smash Brothers, when they went to town on here's War and Peace on every little thing that you could possibly find in it for about 4 hours on that direct that was Smash, I was like, ugh. So I feel like when Nintendo do it, it's a case if they can go overkill the other way and try and do too much hype. But I think there's a place for both. I think it was, I had a really crummy day where, you know, the day when they announced the Mario stuff, and hearing that at the end of that day was just like, whoa, that was really nice. We all knew it was coming at some point, but no one knew when. And then to find out that in 2 weeks, I'm going to be able to play Mario 64 on the toilet. I mean, that's a bad choice
because you could technically do that on the DS, but I know.
Okay,
what you mean.
Okay, I should have picked Sunshine. Or
one of the other two.
I'm
with you. I think what Thomas is describing here is two ends of something I prefer the middle of.
Mm.
Like I like the Paper Mario thing the best. I think this year, where it was announced, but it's coming in 2 months, so it gives you enough time. But then saying that, like literally seeing that. Collection 3D All Stars, by the way, called it on the name just for the record. but seeing that was out in I forget, it was September the
18th,
right? Seeing that, and that I'm watching it and going, wait, it is September. Was like, oh, that is good, but at the same time, they waited so long that hype was fever pitch and it was too much. And there was something in that direct that I really noticed, and I think a few others picked up on, is that they actually said, by the way, this is the last announcement for this direct. And it's like they know that their fans are so fucking hyped now. They have to literally go, this is announcement one of five. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And like,
it's like they say now, like, just to be clear, in this direct, you won't be getting this information.
But Sony have started doing that too, and it's still people. I mean, Microsoft now actually do it because they announced that they were going to be doing something for TGS, and then I think a day or two later came back and said, "Oh, it won't be anything next gen, by the way."
Yeah.
But the thing is this, we are in a weird spot now because COVID has messed everything up. Like, the reason you don't have a price for your PS4 or your Xbox Series X yet is not because they're like, whatever. I mean, the Xbox statement recently was not great, where it's like, we'll tell you when we're ready. We know. But the issue is they don't know the future. They don't know if COVID's going to come back worse, if it's going to settle down. And therefore, they don't want to announce what I believe will be Xbox's $599 console. And then COVID hits and people are furloughed again, and it's like, no one can afford this console. It doesn't matter when they put that console out. For them, they don't care. They can announce the console date is November, whatever. I'm going to call it $599 for the Xbox, and it's November the 13th. I'm going to just call that here. Sony will be $549 or less, and it will be before the Xbox. But Xbox will want to be out before Sony, and they will want to be cheaper. And I believe Xbox, if Sony do announce first, Xbox will internally take the hit, and they will lose money on this console to be cheaper and first. But they don't know what's going to happen.
But I take your point, and you're right. But at some point, you've got to go, well, are we just going to park it for this year? Of course not. So,
no, they're not going to do that because they've already made probably 750,000 of those boxes and they can't store them in warehouses.
Yeah. So you're not going to know when, like, say, COVID or indeed something else could happen.
Yeah, God, this year, who knows, mate?
Yeah. Yeah. Meteor strike or something. Yeah. Alien invasion, that kind of thing. But like, it's.
Why not?
So I kind of feel like you've got to bite the bullet, and, you know, we could talk about for ages about that.
You say that. Do you have to bite the bullet if your intentions are to sell the console directly from your own store? Because here's the thing. All these stores in America, for example, let's talk about the US market. Can they afford to buy in X thousand Xbox Ones and be certain they won't sit on shelves? Because be certain that COVID will be there, be certain that people, that won't be there, and be certain people will come and buy those consoles. The answer is no, they can't. Which and with all these companies being hit by COVID again, what makes more sense for Xbox and PlayStation? So PlayStation have done that thing where they, I guess we are talking news now, PlayStation have done that thing where they are register interest in pre-ordering a pre-order. So what if they're just going to sell them via their store? They've got the logistics to do them because they have the hardware. Selling direct, they already do. All these companies already do this. You know, you can buy a Switch from Nintendo. You can buy an Xbox from Xbox. That, to me, means they don't have to tell you the price until they are absolutely sure, and they can sell you direct anyway. So I'm not 100... I know what everyone's saying, and in relation to the question, the traditional years of preview, it feels like we've waited too long. I'm not wholly convinced, because also Xbox have still got to announce their second model. They've got to announce their Xbox Series S. That's not been announced yet.
No.
Now, I believe the rumours were that it was going to be announced in August, but because of the Halo delay, it's a case of, because also here's the thing, right? If you're announcing a console the way Microsoft are going to have to announce the S, do you put out a 3-minute video showing what it looks like, what the specs are, or do you really want to do that and show a game for it? Because they can't do that right now. They can't put it out and go, and this is what Halo Infinite looks like on it. Because they can't. That game's next year now.
Yeah.
Sony kind of did the right thing by just saying, we're not going to talk to you, but then it's like, here's everything. There's the camera. And that's why I feel like that reveal was smart, because it's now given Sony, while everyone wants the price, they've got wiggle room to be like, well, we've shown you everything. We've given you the specs. You know what the discless version's like. Whereas Xbox are now in a situation where they've got their biggest games delayed. People are assuming that Series X is going to be expensive. And everyone knows the Series S is coming. And it does, you would appear, but just announce it. But how? How do they announce it?
But I always feel like that I mean,
especially
I know
without
been,
a price, by the way. I know how they announce it without a price, because you can't announce a price with the Xbox Series S and not the Xbox Series X, because that's what the fanatics want.
But the Xbox, I mean, might be my personal naivety or misunderstanding of the situation. I don't believe Microsoft are going to launch with the S, and I don't think
you think it would come later.
Yes, I think it's the for possible. Me it's the, for me it's like a, you know the Switch Lite or something. It's like you announce a price and you launch the Xbox Series X,
but,
and then you say here's a slightly toned down version for the people.
But to counter that,
the price.
To counter that, if the console is what I think it will be, which is 500 plus. I think you have to have a second choice, which will be more akin to a 1X or a 1S.
I think if you do that, you're acknowledging that it's too expensive already.
But they've said that they have said as much that this is a beefy console, and with like the you know it's not going to be quite comparable to like the new graphics cards.
Certainly not the new Nvidia ones.
Well, the 2080 and the 2070 are. And I appreciate this is like me going, oh, it's no money at all. They're bloody expensive. But for what they are incredibly good value for money. To get what you would have got for a 3080, you'd have had to go 2080 and it would have cost you a grand. And this is a 650 quid card. And and the 3070 is far, well, it's more than enough.
Yeah.
And that is 450, I think they are. They're reasonable. I've upgraded my PC recently, and I'm genuinely looking, think, can I save up and get a 3080? Because that, I mean, a 3090 it's fucking silly money. You know, those cards aren't made for people like us. They're made for people who've got too much money.
But even I started getting excited and thinking about things like that. And yeah, but I know we're really sidetracking from the original question
What is the original question? So, what do you prefer? I prefer somewhere in the middle.
I think
Paper Mario. I think
I prefer.
I
prefer a mix of both. I wouldn't want one or the other. I'd want both.
Okay.
I like the surprises, but I like the general hype build. So, yeah.
Okay. Sorry for the tangent there, but hey, podcast will as podcast does.
Yeah.
Let's do one more. Actually, this is going to be a weird one because. So, Chris, what that Mario Direct, Thomas says, was like being showered by 1,000 dairy milks after dieting all year. Or green triangles. What's your favorite ever gaming announcement and why?
So. Whenever my answer I instantly think of, and it's probably very predictable because you know I'm a Nintendo fanboy when I was younger and stuff like that, so I always whenever I think about like the gaming announcements, I always think of the announcement at E3 of Zelda Twilight Princess, because it came on the back of cel-shaded Wind Waker, where you know idiots thought that it was cartoony and childish and wasn't very good, and actually it's one of the most expressive Zeldas ever, all that sort of jazz. We got our kind of HD, for want of a better phrase, Link in action for the first time, and I've still watched it fairly recently. Just the reaction that gets sent shivers down my spine, the way the crowd reacted to just seeing it and his little sword swish at the end and everything else, and the crowd just went absolutely wild. I know it's like sometimes it's like journalist bubble and all that sort of stuff, but it really was, for me, it was just one of those things. It was like, I think ever since, I think it was, God, Space World 2000, or I might be quoting the wrong year then, when they did the first tech demo after Ocarina of Time, of Link fighting Ganon, and everyone's like, oh, super realistic Zelda, kind of finally here, and then they didn't get it, so they got Wind Waker, and then it came to this, so it's been kind of building since then, and it was there, and the crowd went wild, and he did this little sword thing at the end, and it was like, yes! So that's the one that always comes into my mind whenever I think about the best kind of announcement reveal type thing. So that's what I'm going for. How about you?
I have a terrible memory. So I can't pinpoint one from the past, but I will say that Direct is up there. Like, that was just banger after banger. Like, I want that Game & Watch. I want to try that Mario Kart thing. And also, that thing's only Nintendo does that, because other companies are like, oh, I ain't doing that. That's ridiculous. No, that won't work. The Battle Royale.
Yeah.
Man, I needed that this week, last week, whenever you're listening. I needed that. Like, I was having it was my day off, actually, and I was having I was still working, because that's what I do on my day off. But I've had a rough week, the week this has been recorded, a real rough, stressful week. I needed that. That was, Thomas has nailed it. It was just like, as if you, and I had to restart a diet the week we're talking about. So it was genuinely like, oh my God, I needed that so bad. And like then, you know, you go on Twitter and people are not moaning about Galaxy 2, and I get it, and I that will come. And then people are moaning about the 6 month period of it being only available. It's like, do you need more than 6 months to decide if you want this or not? Because it's a Nintendo game, which means it's not going to go down in price.
Yeah.
So I don't get that either. Like, it's like, I understand it's a weird decision. I do. I get it. It's a weird decision, and they are weird decisions. But like,
you know what you're getting though. It's not like they're remaking Super Mario 64 from the ground up, and it might run like us. It's literally that game, right?
Yeah.
With a bit of a lick of paint. You know what you're getting. If you haven't decided in 6 months, you genuinely didn't want it. Like that for me is
you're just trying to find something to complain about.
I mean,
to be part of that
literally
trendy fuck society that exists online now.
I pre-ordered straight away because I know, like I say, sunshine on the toilet. There we go, winner for me.
There's a statement. there's a statement. Before we go, I just want to mention that he's not here this week, and he couldn't be anyway because he's not got a laptop to do a podcast on anymore. But you know, obviously, Chris, who has hosted the podcast, not this Chris White, who has hosted the podcast before, who has been with us for a very long time, had a really unfortunate situation recently where he was burgled while he and his family slept upstairs. I don't want to bring the podcast down because everyone's okay. His lovely dog woke up, barked, and scared them off. They did, however, nick his laptop, his Switch, his daughter's mobile phone, his game capture stuff that he uses for God is a Geek. So it is relevant to the site. I set up a Just Giving for him because basically his insurance isn't going to cover it. We're already at over £1,000, because obviously we're in the UK, and would like to raise, if possible, £1,500 because we can replace everything that it was stolen that way. The outpouring has been of love and support has been amazing.
I set a
target of 1,000 initially because it felt like a lot to ask people for, and that's been smashed within a couple of days. Hopefully by the time you hear this, I'm talking in the past, it's already 1,500. But if it isn't, there will be a link in this podcast. Consider this a fundraiser for Chris, this podcast. Chris is a lovely guy. Once a year, if you don't know, he streams for charity himself, usually for mental health charities, but I think he's done other stuff in the past.
Yeah, it's just his, a 24-hour, isn't it? Normally it's a 24-hour stream.
Yeah, he puts himself in the fire line. He's always been there for us. And I'd like to think he gives everyone, you know, a good laugh on the pod. And if you listen to Fork Off, he definitely gives you a good laugh. I'm not going to pimp the Patreon this week. You know where it is by now, I'm sure. But I am going to literally, as I say, there'll be a link to the Just Giving in this. And no pressure. Like, times are tough, man. Times are tough. I do appreciate that. Even if you can share it and just say, hey, look, these guys are good and this guy's a lovely guy. I can't afford it, but I'm going to share this on Twitter because I'd love him to get his stuff back. I'd love him to get... The thing I wanted to achieve is I wanted to show Chris's daughter more than anything, who obviously the kids were shaken up by this. You would be. I've had similar happen to me and it's fucking horrible. But I wanted to show them that the good will out. As Embrace wrote the album, The Good Will Out. I wanted to show his daughters, you know what, and obviously this isn't what we say to them, but fuck the bad guys. I want to get her a better phone. I want there to be enough, like I say, 1500 covers it, but I want her to somehow get a better phone than she ever had before to show them that you can be a bad guy, but you will never, ever beat the good guys. And I believe that we are the good guys, and I believe that people who listen to this in our community and the gaming community overall, I want to say they're good guys and gals, but we know that's not always true. But the people who listen to this, we know are. So thank you if you can you, if you already have. In fact, you probably already have donated, and thank you for that. That is a podcast for this week. Chris Hyde, not White, Chris Hyde, thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me, mate.
You can say you can speak, it's fine. You spoke a lot, but you suddenly went quiet then. No, thank you for being here, man. And yeah, there'll be a link to Just Giving just somewhere down here in the below the fold. And if not, I'll put it in the podcast description. If you just listen, that's fine too. We appreciate any way you listen. And if it's a pound, a fiver, whatever you can. Even a pound is better than not a pound, as the old saying goes. So thank you very much for listening, and we will speak to you next week or whenever you choose to listen. Bye-bye for now.